This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and our guest today is a Chicago native, so you know this is going to be a fun episode. He started singing around the age of five, and the bug to perform stuck with him throughout his youth. He began his singing career in his teens and pursued his dreams of doing what he loved to do, singing and entertaining. He has a couple of CDs out there, and we are pleased to have time to talk to him today. Christopher Henderson, welcome to Time Signatures, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I appreciate your time, man. And I want to dive right in here because there's so much to talk about. But I'd love for you to talk about your earliest memories of music.
Okay. Well, my earliest memories came from home. Growing up around a lot of blues lovers, jazz lovers in my family. My family migrated from Mississippi. My grandparents, my maternal grandparents and paternal grandparents, my great aunts and uncles. So I grew up around a lot of older relatives, and we always had, you know, parties and gatherings, and they would play the blues, Muddy Waters and B.B. King, Howlin' Wolf, you name it. Everybody was playing in our house. So I just kind of picked up from that, you know.
Sure.
The emotion of blues, how my family reacted, the singing, the dancing, you know. So it started young at home, yeah.
You know, that influence, when I was growing up, you and I are cut from similar cloth because I was also exposed to a lot of the older music going way back to the big band and the swing years. But how did that first generation of blues music influence you as you began to develop a taste for it?
Well, I just used to mimic the records and stuff, the songs that were being played. And so my mother, she realized that as a young boy, that I had a gift, that it was just bigger than just singing along with the record. She's like, oh man, you know, my son can sing, he's very talented, because I used to sound like a lot of the artists, you know. So she would have me perform for the family, they would come over, and I had to put on performances for my relatives. So that's how I really knew there's something that I can do, and I wanted to do it professionally.
There you go. Now, at the age of five, you got your first taste of singing around the house, as you just talked about. And you also got some impromptu opportunities to cash in, didn't you?
I did. when I was about 16 is when I really started to gain an audience and to sing like live in front of an audience with different musicians and stuff. I had went to a blues jam on the west side of Chicago. They used to have blues jams, and my mother volunteered me to go, her and my aunts. And they did have an intermission, and they asked, did anyone want to sing? You know, anybody know the blues and want to sing the blues? So my mother's like, yeah, my son, you know, and they looked at me like, this kid, you know, what's he going to, they thought I was going to rap or something like that, you know. But
Right.
I took the microphone, and like they say, the rest is history. The people, they were blown away by my talent. They didn't know that was coming from a little kid, you know. So that was, and then I started to get paid for, you know, weekly. So that was like the first professional gig for me.
Now, I want to step back and flesh that story out just a little bit, because I want to hear your story about your connection to then Chicago Alderman Wallace Davis.
Okay.
How did that connection come to be?
I actually met him that day when I went, because it was at the Catfish Corner, which was his establishment, and we would have live blues there. So I was singing on the stage, and he came out of the restaurant, him and his wife, who since had passed. My condolences to him and their family, but him and his wife came out of the restaurant while I was singing, and he stopped the band, he stopped everything, the musicians, the people. He said, wait a minute, who is this little boy? You know, you mean to tell me this is a little boy out here singing? And asked me my name and where I was from. He was in awe, you know. He's like, oh my God, you know. He just, and so he took a liking to me, and he kind of like mentored me a few years, because I'd done that for a few years. So that was the day that I met him. He came out of the restaurant, you know, seeing me in action. So he was surprised. He called me the Michael Jackson of the blues, you know, then. So, yeah. But yeah, so that was a cool experience. Yep.
And what song did you sing that first time on stage?
My first song was Bobby Blue Bland. I'm a big Bobby Blue Bland fan, especially during that time. And I sung I Pity the Fool. I did like a medley. Then I did Further On Up the Road. Those were the songs that I kind of did,
Okay. Now, Chris, I love that you have such an eclectic taste in the blues. I always describe the blues as a buffet because there's so many little subsets involved in it. And quite frankly, I take the plate and I just put what I want on there, and that's what you need to do, you know?
Yeah, but absolutely.
After reading that article from 2020 in the Living Blues magazine, I've added a couple of names to my blues list, and I want to thank you for that.
Okay.
Some of the early blues influences that you had. Talk about your musical taste, if you would, please.
Well, yeah.
Throw some of them OGs in there, man, because you got to keep them names out there.
I'm well-rounded. It started, I used to collect records. My mother would give us allowance, so that started at very, very young. I started collecting at like 12 years old, and I would collect like blues from the 1920s, like Bessie Smith, Ma Rainey, King Oliver, you know, with jazz. All those people from like New Orleans and the South, I was really fascinated. And it was just something about that deep, deep blues, like from the 20s and the 30s, you know. You would thought that that's what I'll be doing now, but I'm very well-rounded. But those people inspired me the most just because it was different to me and it was new to me, you know, at that time. So yeah, like those are the blues. I like Sister Rosetta. Just a lot of those type of people, you know, that I started to collect early on, you know.
Well, and I think that, you know, the older, and by the way, Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey are two of the names that I added to my list. And I actually went and bought some CDs of them today, in fact, while I was preparing for the interview, because I wanted to rework it a little bit. But I have to tell you, I love the older stuff. But as I've heard so many times before, I believe it was Muddy Waters that might have said that you pick up the blues where you find it and you carry it a little bit further on down the road and you do your own thing with it. One of the things that I respect most about a lot of the blues artists today is that's exactly what y'all are doing. It doesn't have to be in a cookie cutter box where you just have to do everything the same way, do you?
You're right about that. So true. And that's what I try to bring with my artistry and my blues, because I do traditional blues, I do soul blues, and I just put it all in the pot and I just give everybody a little bit of everything, you know, for everybody.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
See, and I like a little bit of that soul blues, man. There's something about it. And honestly, the longer that I'm in this, doing this program, the more I'm learning about the different aspects and the different subsets of the genre, I'm going to be honest. I just recently learned about soul blues.
Okay.
Because I'm familiar with hill country blues. I'm familiar with Memphis blues, Chicago blues, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. The list goes on. But there are so many different subsets, and each of these subsets brings something new to the table, don't they?
Absolutely, you're so correct. Oh, like soul blues, you have Bobby Bland and B.B. King and those type of artists versus, you know, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. It's the same, but it's not the same, because, you know, it's different generations and they bring something new to it. So, yeah.
One of the things that I like about that is, you know, you get people like B.B. who flows freely between the soul blues and some of the more traditional forms of the genre.
Uh-huh.
And I think that you've got a lot of people, even in Chicago today, Taranzo Cannon, Mike Wheeler, John Primer.
Yeah.
They all, even though they're Chicago blues, they bring a little twist, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. They put their signaturize it. They put their own spin on it.
Right there. Time signatures, man. They put their signature on it.
There you go.
There's a gentleman over here in the southwest corner of the state of Michigan. He goes by the nickname of Mississippi Mick. His name is Mick Colossa. And he describes his version of the blues as free range blues because he's everywhere.
Okay. I like that.
He lived down in the hill country area down near Clarksdale. If people give it a chance, there are so many different avenues that the blues can take you. Am I correct in that?
You're so correct. Absolutely.
Now, Obviously, at the time of this article's publication, we were dealing with the COVID pandemic.
Yes.
Chris, are you finding that things are kind of returning to a certain level of normalcy nowadays?
Yes, absolutely. Right before the pandemic, I had a lot of different opportunities to do shows and to go overseas, you know. And then right when it was going to happen, you know, the pandemic just dropped me flat on my face, you know. So I feel like now is the time that things are picking back up. It's time to get on out there. So yes, I do.
Good. I've talked to so many people. Of course, we all went through the COVID pandemic. We were all locked up for, you know, for the better part of a year or a little more. What did you do during that time? Because obviously at that time you were kind of on a trajectory upward, weren't you?
Yes. I just focused on the music. I drowned myself in the music. I did a lot of writing songs because I write a lot of, mostly everything that I do, I write. I started to do that early on as well as a teen, writing different little songs and melodies. So I did a lot of writing during the pandemic. I did release my second project right at the tail end of the pandemic. So a lot of those, that project kind of came from the pandemic. It was during that time.
Okay. Now, I guess when you were writing during the pandemic, did you record at that time during that that period?
I did, yes. I did the song Made No Sense. I did a cover of Ain't Nobody's Business. I did that during the pandemic, yes.
Okay. I was going to ask if that period of time had a bit of a sway on your music at that time and your writing, if some of that made its way into the album.
It did, mm-hmm. Yeah, the song, It Don't Make No Sense, that was really pertaining to the pandemic.
Okay, well, talk about that a little bit.
You know, it was a pandemic, and then I felt like during that time, it made it harder for people to, you know, live their, of course, everyday life, their livelihood. So it was just it just didn't make sense to me. So that's why I named the song, It Don't Make No Sense. You know, people are walking around. You had people who were struggling during that time on top of a pandemic. So it was just a lot of inflation. It was just a lot of everyday life hardships included with the pandemic. You know, that's basically what that speaks of.
And I remember that time so vividly because, number one, I'm in my late 50s. Number two, of course, I was mid-50s back then. Number two, I am also a type 2 diabetic.
Oh, wow.
And there were a lot of people that had pre-existing conditions such as that that were really scared, I mean, you know, for their lives.
Yes, absolutely.
And, so they didn't want to be out. They didn't want to be anywhere near anybody. And I remember coming home with grocery bags. I had, at the time, we had 8 people living here. All 3 of my kids. I had a nephew. I had a gentleman that I was renting a room to. My husband was here. I mean, 8 people in this house, okay? And I was the guy that was going out doing the shopping. And I remember coming home and wiping the bags off on the porch with, with wipes just to make sure that, you know, I wasn't bringing stuff into the house. But it just, it feels good that we're past that. And and it's nice to be back out there among the public and being able to go to concerts and all kinds of stuff.
Yes, it is. That was so depressed. That was a depressed. I kind of fell into a depressed because I didn't get a chance to promote my album like I wanted to. I couldn't go out and do shows. I couldn't. It was like a standstill. So I kind of, I won't say regret, but I wish I would have waited to release it so I can do more with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, and the thing is, I think depression was a big part of that time. I'm a very social person, and I have become considerably less social than I am, than I have been in the past.
Okay.
And I think a lot of it is due to the COVID pandemic and all that. But
I agree.
I want to flip the page here, Chris, and I want to talk about something else. How is your collection of Living Blues magazines going?
It's going good. I got, I got them packed away now, but they're going well. I'm still collecting them. I think my oldest one is from 1990 or 89, I believe.
I'm going to tell you, you need to look on eBay, and I'm going to tell you why, because I found one. Of course, I'm sure you've heard about the 1969 Ann Arbor Blues Festival.
I did, yes.
Okay, I've got the albums. I have the CDs. I actually have a couple, and I wish I could put my hands on them right now because I'd show it to you. But I have the Living Blues magazine that has all the pictures from that event.
Oh, wow.
And Yeah, and I found it on eBay, and it was like $7, $8, something like that.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to get some of that older stuff, go check it out.
Okay, most definitely.
Chris, we have to talk about what you've been doing lately, man. Are you working on any more stuff on the music front? Do you have a new album in the works or a tour coming up? What's going on?
Yes, I got a couple of things coming up. I did want to plug my latest re-release of a performance, a live performance that I did of a few years ago. Chris Henderson live at Moe's Tavern. You can order at elasticstage.com. So this is the album.
Ooh, is that vinyl?
Yes, it is.
Christopher Henderson, you got vinyl?
I got vinyl.
you know, I gotta listen. On April 8th last year, I had no vinyl. Okay. On today, April the 3rd, not even a year later, I have over 400 pieces of vinyl, and more than half of it is blues.
Really?
Trust me when I tell you, my friend, I will be pre-ordering that tomorrow. I promise you.
Okay, yes. Tomorrow you can pre-order at elasticstage.com, and then it will be available April 28th. So this is the vinyl.
Beautiful, again. Man. That is so cool. Now
this is a 12-inch vinyl. It's double-sided. It's 8 minutes on each side. And the reason why I'm releasing it is because Moe's Tavern was going back to the pandemic. They shut down due to the pandemic.
Okay.
And the owner passed of COVID-19.
Oh, man.
And she was a beautiful lady. She gave me a platform to showcase blues. And I did a show February the 16th, 2018. And this is what this vinyl is.
Wow. Yes.
So you can pre-order again.
I was going to say, and how much is this?
So the vinyl is $29.99 for the U.S.
Okay.
And then overseas is $27.99.
Okay. All right. Very good. And we will definitely put a link up in the information section of this episode so that people can go in there and they can get that episode or that that album and order it for their own. Now,
yeah,
Chris,
so I'm excited. This is my first vinyl release, so I love vinyl. I have quite a collection as well, so I'm just excited about it. I'm excited.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about vinyl. I've got this illness, I think.
That's how I was growing up, you know, collecting and going to the record shop, spending all my money on vinyl.
But you know, as I was reading that article, Chris.
Uh-huh.
You brought me back to the days when I was 11, 12 years old, and I'd run down to this little corner store called Harry's Amusements.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about seven blocks from our house. And I would run down there, and this is back when a 45 was like a buck and a half.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I got my first album of Elvis Presley, and I can't remember the name of it, but I have a copy of it over there.
Okay.
And I bought that from Lucky's Amusements over on the west side of town when I was at my grandmother's bakery that she was working at.
Okay.
I don't know why I ever got away from it, but I have to tell you, I have a vintage PL518 Pioneer over here. I know this is geek talk for some of you. It's an incredible direct drive turntable that has been totally refurbished from 1978.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's almost 50 years old.
Is it
original? Well, it's not my original. This is what I just picked up within the last year.
Okay, okay.
And so, I mean, I got a nice piece of equipment to listen to my stuff on.
Okay.
And I'm using an Ortofon stylus, which is high dollar. But it's, I'm telling you, the quality and listening to the clicks and the pops and the white noise and... You know, that whole thing about pulling the thing out of the vinyl out of the sleeve. It's incredible.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, Chris, here's your moment to shine, man. Where can people go to find out more about you, maybe pick up that album, some merchandise, or even book you for a gig?
Okay. Well, you can find me on Facebook, Chris D. Henderson. That's my artist page. So all of my upcoming shows, live performances, anything that's new and updated with me, you can find it there. Chris D. Henderson on Facebook, as well as Christopher Henderson on Instagram. You can book me at chrishendersonbooking@gmail.com. You can pick up the vinyl pre-order, like I said, starts tomorrow, elasticstage.com, and it'll be available April 28th elasticstage.com, same website, and you can order it from there. I will have hard copies next month, so if anyone would like to reach out to me and have them signed and I can send them out, they can have that option as well. I am releasing a new single called Heartbreak Blues, Blues Heartbreak, and that will be released later this month, April.
Very cool. So you got a lot going on, man.
Oh, yeah, man. I try not to let the grass grow under my feet. I try to keep it moving.
Good thing to do, man.
Yeah.
Christopher Henderson, it has been a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for joining me today on Time Signatures, and I genuinely look forward to meeting up with you down the road.
Most definitely. Thank you so much. I appreciate for all that you do for blues artists and what you do, giving us a platform and your contribute to the blues. Much appreciated. And I'm looking forward to meeting you one day.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you so much. That means a lot. And before we wrap up here, I want to remind you that it takes an estimated 5,000 music streams to raise the equivalent of a $20 CD. Now, I couldn't believe that either, but I've made it my policy to buy music from the artist first, and then and only then I will stream from the various platforms. I mean, if we want live music out there, we owe it to them to spend our hard-earned cash and supporting their music and merch. Trust me when I tell you, they will thank you every single time. And thank you for your consideration, folks. And that concludes this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guest, Chris Henderson, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.